Welcome to Pree's Perspective, the Commercial Intelligence Brief, the definitive audio dispatch for commercial real estate executives, hospitality operators, and institutional investors. Produced by PRI Consulting and directed by veteran advisor Priyanshu Adathakar, this platform utilizes advanced AI audio synthesis to distill complex market data, underwritten deal frameworks, and global macroeconomic shifts into high-leverage insights for busy decision-makers. Time is equity. Let's look at the data.
So welcome to today's deep dive. We're getting into something that, it feels a bit counterintuitive at first.
Yeah, it really does.
We're looking at why the absolute worst time for you to learn how to invest is actually during a massive market peak.
Right. Which is exactly when everyone wants to jump in.
Exactly. I mean, we've got this really compelling piece of market intelligence today. It's called The Architecture of Resilience in Commercial Real Estate. And it features the perspective of Priyanshu Adathakar, he goes by Pri, who is a commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor.
And licensed realtor, which, you know, gives him that boots on the ground perspective.
Right. So our mission today is really to unpack this this tendency we have. Why do we instinctively gravitate toward the loudest, most successful peak performers? And, you know, what fatal blind spots are we adopting when we let them teach us?
It's a critical question for anyone allocating capital right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because capital naturally flows toward whoever's making the most noise at the top of a cycle.
Oh, for sure.
But commercial real estate, I mean, by its very nature, it's inherently cyclical. It breathes in and out. And more importantly, the market is entirely indifferent to your optimism.
It doesn't care how good you feel about a deal.
Exactly. True resilience in this space, and frankly, in any high-stakes financial arena, it isn't built on the ceiling when everything is going perfectly. It's engineered on the floor.
Yeah, to put that into perspective for you, investing in a booming market is, well, it's a lot like sailing with a massive tailwind.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. The sun is shining, the water is clear, and everyone looks like a genius captain. You just point the boat and go.
It feels completely effortless.
It does. But the danger of that kind of sailing is that it teaches you absolutely nothing about the actual mechanics of your boat, and it certainly teaches you nothing about what to do when a hurricane hits.
Right. And that tailwind, it creates a really dangerous illusion, because in commercial real estate, a booming market is characterized by, you know, incredibly cheap debt and compressing cap rates.
Wow.
When capital is essentially free and property valuations are universally skyrocketing, it acts as a mirage. It papers over a severe lack of stress testing.
It just masks all the sloppy underwriting.
Exactly. It hides everything.
Let's break down the actual mechanics of that mirage, because I think it's central to understanding the danger here. When you mention compressing cap rates, masking sloppy underwriting, how exactly does that math work in the real world?
Sure.
Like, how does a rising market hide a genuinely bad operator?
Well, it all comes down to how commercial properties are valued. The value of a building is essentially its net operating income. So the revenue minus the expenses.
Okay, the NOI.
Right, the NOI. You divide that by the capitalization rate or the cap rate. And the cap rate is really just the yield the market demands at that moment.
Got it.
So in a booming market with cheap debt, buyers are suddenly willing to accept lower yields. So cap rates compress. They go down.
Right.
And mathematically, if you divide the exact same income by a smaller cap rate, it results in a much higher property valuation.
Wait, so the value of the building goes up just because the market is hot, regardless of what the operator is actually doing inside the building?
Precisely. I mean, let's say you have a property generating $100,000 in net income. At a 10% cap rate, that building is worth $1 million.
Makes sense.
But if the market heats up and cap rates compress to, say, 5%, that exact same building is suddenly worth $2 million on paper.
Wow. Literally double.
Double the value.
Yeah.
Now imagine the operator is actually terrible at their job.
Okay.
Like, they mismanaged the property, maintenance costs just spiraled completely out of control, and the net income drops to $80,000.
So they're losing money on the operation side.
Right. But because the cap rate is now at 5%, the building is still valued at $1.6 million.
Oh, wow. So they still look like they're winning.
Exactly. The operator looks like an absolute genius to their investors because they created $600,000 in equity out of nowhere, when in reality, they degraded the core business.
The rising tide just bailed them out of their own incompetence.
That is exactly what happened.
That makes the danger incredibly clear. Because if you're a new investor or even an experienced one entering a new asset class, human nature dictates that you look around and try to mimic whoever is generating the highest returns right now.
Of course. That's what we're wired to do.
But if you're learning exclusively from current peak performers, you know, the ones who have only ever operated in an environment where cap rate compression bails out their mistakes, you're falling into this huge mentorship trap.
You're adopting a playbook that assumes the tailwind will literally never stop. You're preparing your capital for a permanent summer.
A permanent summer. I love that phrasing.
Yeah, and that leaves you entirely exposed when the economic seasons inevitably change. Because they always do.
They always do. So if we accept that this permanent summer playbook is an illusion, we really need to understand exactly what it looks like compared to a strategy that's actually built for survival. And the source material draws a very sharp contrast here between a peak-only playbook and a cycle-tested playbook.
Yes, it lays it out perfectly.
So in the peak-only approach, operators obsess over pro forma yields and rapid scale. They maximize their leverage, you know, borrowing as much money as humanly possible just to juice those short-term returns.
And we really have to look at what is actually inside those pro forma yields. Because
mm-hmm.
a pro forma is simply a forward-looking financial projection.
It's just a spreadsheet.
It's just a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And in a peak-only playbook, these spreadsheets assume permanent optimal market conditions.
Right.
They assume rent growth will compound at like 5% every single year. Indefinitely. They assume vacancy will remain at a perfectly stable 2%.
Which never happens in the real world.
Never.
Yeah.
And they often conveniently ignore the fact that property taxes are going to be reassessed at a much higher rate once the property is actually sold. I mean, it is a mathematical fantasy disguised as a business plan.
It's the equivalent of, well, it's like building a skyscraper and obsessing entirely over the penthouse views and the Italian marble countertops while completely ignoring the stability of the ground the building is sitting on.
That is spot on.
Compare that to the cycle-tested playbook. This approach prioritizes defensive asset classes. It builds aggressive, absolute worst-case stress tests into every single financial model.
Yes.
And instead of maximizing leverage, it deeply scrutinizes debt structures, covenants, and liquid reserve positions.
And I have to say, that scrutiny of debt structures is the dividing line between an investor who survives a crash and one who loses everything.
Really? It's that stark.
Absolutely. The peak investor, they only look at the interest rate. The cycle-tested investor looks at the covenants.
Let's pause on that for a second, because covenants are often these like silent killers in real estate deals.
They really are.
What exactly is a debt covenant, and why does scrutinizing it matter so much when the macroeconomic environment starts to shift?
Well, a debt covenant is a legally binding condition that's written directly into the loan agreement by the lender.
Okay.
It isn't just about, you know, making your monthly mortgage payment on time. A very common covenant is the debt service coverage ratio, or the DSCR.
The DSCR.
So the bank might stipulate that your property's net operating income must always remain at least, let's say, 1.25 times larger than your debt payment.
Okay, so you need a buffer.
You need a buffer. Now, if a recession hits, a major tenant moves out, and your income drops so that it is only 1.1 times your debt payment, you breach the covenant.
Wait, even if you are still making the monthly loan payments on time and in full?
Even if you haven't missed a single payment.
Are you serious?
Completely serious. A covenant breach triggers a technical default.
Wow.
And when that happens, the bank suddenly has the right to sweep all of your cash flow. They can freeze your distributions to your investors, or they can even demand full repayment of the loan immediately.
Which essentially forces a foreclosure.
Exactly. And the cycle-tested investor knows this. They negotiate much softer covenants up front, and they mandate massive liquid reserves specifically to cure potential covenant breaches before the bank could ever take the keys.
Right.
Going back to your construction analogy, they are obsessing over the concrete foundation and the hurricane-proof windows. They don't care about the marble countertops if the building is going to collapse in a stiff breeze.
That is such a crucial point. Because when you look at the macroeconomic pressure we're seeing today, I mean, wild interest rate volatility, massive shifts in commercial tenant demands, geopolitical uncertainty, a theoretical sure bet can turn into a restructuring nightmare almost overnight.
Overnight, absolutely.
And when those shifts happen, the investor who maxed out their leverage and only knows the penthouse playbook, they just freeze.
Yeah, they do.
They completely lack the muscle memory to handle a downturn.
They freeze because the visceral reality of a market correction is nothing like reading about it in a textbook.
Yeah.
It is a deeply uncomfortable, traumatic event. Investors who have only ever operated at the peak, they fail because they have never actually had to look a capital provider in the eye during workout or a foreclosure.
Yeah. Sitting across a boardroom table from a pension fund manager or a group of private individuals who trusted you with their life savings and having to explicitly explain that the equity is completely wiped out.
Or that the capital is trapped indefinitely.
Right. It's brutal.
It is a fundamentally altering experience.
Yeah.
I mean, there are legal fees piling up, emergency capital calls, and just this dawning realization that the spreadsheet completely failed you.
Yeah.
If you haven't been in that room, you don't truly comprehend what it takes to avoid being in that room again.
That makes total sense.
The peak investor who loses a building, they just shrug and think the market turned against them. They think it was just bad luck.
Right. The Fed raised rates, nothing I could do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the cycle-tested investor who has survived that room, they know exactly which structural flaws in their capital stack brought them there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And they vow to never, ever underwrite a deal that fragile again.
Okay, I understand the mechanics of how a downturn operates now, but I do have to play the skeptic for a moment here on behalf of the listener.
Sure, go for it.
Because if I'm an investor and I'm putting, say, $500,000 of my own capital into a syndication or a fund, I genuinely struggle with the idea of intentionally backing a sponsor who has a track record of losing properties.
It's a fair point.
Right. Like, why wouldn't I seek out the advisor who navigated the last crash perfectly and didn't lose a single dime? Why would I actively want someone with scars?
It's a completely rational question, but it fundamentally misunderstands the nature of risk in commercial real estate.
How so?
Because avoiding risk entirely in this industry means never actually doing a deal. Sometimes the operators with these unblemished records through a crash, they were simply sitting entirely in cash, which isn't investing, or they just got incredibly lucky with the timing of their lease expirations.
Yeah, I see.
The true value of a battered investor isn't the failure itself. Failure is not a credential.
Right. You don't get a medal for losing money.
Exactly. The value lies in the strategic acumen and the psychological resilience required to navigate the financial, legal, and emotional wreckage of that failure and then actually use it to rebuild.
Because the failure forces what the text describes as a brutal, flawless autopsy of the deal.
Exactly. That's the perfect phrase for it. When you lose money, especially other people's money, there is no room left for ego. The ego is entirely stripped away by the reality of the loss.
It has to be.
You are forced to look at every single line item on that pro forma and figure out exactly which assumption cracked under pressure.
Like, did we underestimate the cost of insurance premiums?
Yes. Or did we use a floating rate debt product without purchasing an interest rate cap?
Right.
That painful forensic process, it leaves behind nothing but bulletproof risk management. An advisor with an unblemished record just hasn't had to perform that autopsy yet. Their assumptions have never been violently stress tested by reality.
So if avoiding risk means doing no deals, and failure is just an inherent possibility when investing over a long enough time horizon, the critical skill for you, the listener, becomes knowing how to evaluate the people you partner with.
Exactly.
So how do you actually sit down with an advisor and distinguish between a cycle-tested survivor who learned a vital lesson and just a perpetually bad investor who is just going to lose your money again?
You pay very close attention to exactly how they discuss their past. I mean, you should actually be incredibly wary of people waving around flawless short-term track records.
Interesting.
The hallmark of a truly resilient advisor is that they openly and willingly discuss their scars. They do hide the deals that went sideways.
Right.
But more importantly, it is about what comes immediately after that confession.
Ah, right. Because a bad operator is just going to blame the Federal Reserve, the lending environment, the general contractor, literally everyone but themselves.
Precisely. A cycle-tested survivor takes absolute ownership. And then they will explain the exact mathematical defensive frameworks they implemented in their underwriting as a direct result of that specific failure.
Okay, so they don't just say, well, we learned our lesson.
No. They will say something very specific, like, I lost a property in 2008 because my debt matured at a time when capital markets were completely frozen and I didn't have the cash to bridge the gap. Because of that scar, my firm now strictly requires a minimum of 18 months of debt service in a liquid reserve account before we will close any acquisition.
Wow. That is the difference right there. They take the abstract theory of learning from failure and they translate it into a tangible, non-negotiable change in their financial modeling.
Exactly. It becomes part of their DNA.
And that really brings us to the real-world application of this entire philosophy. This is perfectly encapsulated by Priyanshu at the Thakkar's perspective.
Yeah.
Because Pri operates under a strict, fiduciary, first philosophy that is just brilliant in its simplicity. He says, I don't advise on deals I wouldn't fund myself.
Which is the ultimate, undeniable litmus test for alignment between an advisor and an investor.
It really is. It's the equivalent of a chef who eats their own cooking every single night.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Because that level of conviction completely changes the menu. Think about it. If a chef is only cooking for you, they might optimize for the short-term thrill, right? They'll throw in a massive amount of butter and salt because it tastes incredible for the first bite and they don't have to deal with the stomach ache that comes later.
Yeah, they're not eating it.
Exactly. The peak only advisor is that chef. They are optimizing for the immediate fee and the short-term yield. But if that chef has to eat the meal themselves every single day, suddenly they care deeply about the nutritional value and the long-term health effects.
Absolutely.
Pri's rule guarantees that his incentives are permanently tied to the long-term health of the investment.
And that level of conviction, it does not originate from watching a spreadsheet hit optimal numbers during a market high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, spreadsheets are highly obedient tools.
They really are.
They will tell you whatever story you want them to tell if you tweak the growth assumptions just right.
Just bump rent growth up by 1% and suddenly the deal looks amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But price perspective comes from deeply respecting real-world volatility. And this becomes paramount when you are underwriting incredibly complex projects.
Right.
The source specifically mentions the vulnerability of hospitality and adaptive reuse projects. In those arenas, the stakes of the downside are magnified exponentially.
Let's look at why those specific asset classes demand that level of cycle-tested conviction. Take hospitality, for example.
Right.
What makes a hotel investment so uniquely vulnerable compared to, say, an industrial warehouse?
Well, it really comes down to the lease structure. Mm-hmm. So an industrial warehouse might have a massive credit tenant signed to a 10-year lease, right? Your revenue is relatively secure for an entire decade. A hotel, on the other hand, operates on one-night leases.
Oh, wow. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, the revenue resets every single day. So if a recession hits or, you know, a global event abruptly halts corporate travel, a hotel's occupancy can drop from 80% down to 20% overnight.
Just literally overnight.
Literally overnight. You cannot rely on long-term cash flow to float the mortgage. So if you haven't engineered a structural way to survive that sudden drop in revenue, you know, through conservative leverage, massive reserves, and highly flexible operational models, you will lose the asset within months.
And adaptive reuse projects, they carry a similar weight of risk, right? Like taking an abandoned century-old factory and converting it into a boutique hotel or luxury loft.
Oh, the variance in capital required for adaptive reuse is just staggering.
Yeah.
You are dealing with potential environmental remediation, unforeseen structural decay completely hidden behind walls, and really complex zoning battles.
Right.
All those glamorous projections about the final property value, they're completely worthless if the capital stack isn't built to absorb a construction budget that suddenly swells by 30% because of a structural surprise.
You have to plan for the worst.
Exactly. A resilient advisor like Pri has already mapped out exactly how the project survives that worst case scenario before a single dollar of equity is ever committed.
It really is the discipline of engineering survival before you ever attempt to engineer success.
That is the core bottom line here. A peak investor can point to the ceiling. They can show you the absolute maximum potential return if all the stars align and the macroeconomic tailwinds just continue forever.
Right.
But a resilient investor knows exactly how strong the foundation needs to be to hold the building up when the ground actually starts shaking. When you are deploying capital and underwriting your future, you must choose the guidance that inherently protects your downside.
We have covered some incredibly important ground today. And really, the overarching takeaway here is that chasing that permanent summer playbook leaves you and your capital entirely exposed to the elements.
Completely exposed.
When you are evaluating partners, syndicators, or mentors, you actively want to look for the people with scars.
Yes.
You are looking for the operators who prioritize capital preservation over rapid, reckless scale, and the ones who automatically stress test their models for the absolute worst case scenario. Do not be seduced by the penthouse views. checks the concrete foundation.
I love that. And I'll leave you with a final thought to explore on your own, thinking about how this whole concept of the permanent summer extends beyond just human advisors.
Oh.
Where else does it apply?
Well, we rely so heavily today on real estate technology, right? Automated valuation models, AI underwriting software.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
But the vast majority of these algorithms were trained on market data sets generated between 2010 and 2021.
Oh, wow.
Right. That's an unprecedented historic 14-year bull run characterized by artificially low interest rates.
A literal permanent summer.
Exactly. So we worry about human mentors lacking muscle memory for a downturn, but we really must also ask, are we currently outsourcing our capital decisions to algorithms and artificial intelligence that have literally never seen a winter?
That is a brilliant and honestly slightly terrifying angle, because if the data feeding the AI only knows a tailwind, the software is inherently adopting a peak playbook.
It has no other choice.
It's a powerful reminder that you simply cannot outsource the responsibility of stress testing your own investments. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep asking the hard questions, and keep building those resilient foundations. We will catch you next time.
You've got the perspective. Now it's time to drive the news forward. To ensure you never miss a market shift, tap subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If today's insights are going to impact your strategy, share this episode with a colleague or investment partner who needs to see the big picture. For actionable guides, newsletter subscriptions, and direct advisor consultation, head over to bearinvestors.com. Thank you for listening. We'll watch the market closely. Until next week.